The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The Israeli military is carrying out a series of airstrikes inside Gaza after Hamas attacked Israeli soldiers near the city of Rafah. A military official telling Fox News that Hamas violated the ceasefire by shooting at troops beyond the yellow line in an area controlled by Israel. Following that incident, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu held a high-level security consultation before ordering immediate and powerful strikes inside the Gaza Strip. Earlier this month, two Israeli soldiers were killed in southern Gaza during the first major violation by Hamas of the ceasefire agreement. Hamas was set to release the body of an additional hostage tonight, one of 13 that remain inside the enclave. The group's Al-Qassam brigades released a statement last hour saying the transfer would not take place due to what they claim are Israeli violations to the agreement. Overnight, Hamas released the partial remains of an Israeli hostage whose body was already recovered after they promised to release new remains. This issue is a sticking point for phase one and could affect the implementation of the agreement.
Yesterday was a painful day in Israel. Yesterday, Hamas killed Ephraim Yona Feldman, one of our soldiers, an Israeli-American citizen, father of five children. May his memory be a blessing. Yesterday, we also saw a horrendous scene, something that I don't think none of us would imagine to see on a video. In this video, what we saw is Hamas terrorists throwing the body remains of a hostage out of a window. Let me repeat this. Hamas terrorists throwing the body remains of a hostage out of a window. After that, Hamas hid and buried the body remains. And then they called the Red Cross to pretend they had discovered a body.
Well, as I understand it, they took out an Israeli soldier. I just heard about it a little while ago. They killed an Israeli soldier, so the Israelis hit back, and they should hit back. When that happens, they should hit back. You have to understand, Hamas is a very small part of peace in the Middle East, and they have to behave. They're on the rough side. But they said they would be good, and if they're good, they're going to be happy, and if they're not good, they're going to be terminated. Their lives will be terminated, and they understand that. Nobody knows what happened to the Israeli soldier, but they say it was sniper fire, and it was retribution for that, and I think they have a right to do that.
But the idea of Hamas disarming voluntarily is a fantasy. They're religious Nazis. They're like the SS. They're built to kill Jews. They're not going to change their ways until somebody makes them. The idea that some stabilizing force made up of Arabs are going to go into Gaza and fight Hamas to disarm them is also not realistic. The only force available to disarm Hamas through military force is the state of Israel. Since the ceasefire, Israel has been attacked twice by Hamas terrorists. Four soldiers have been killed. So I predict that if things don't change pretty quickly, Israel's going to go back into Gaza and finish off Hamas. Until Hamas is finished off militarily and politically, there will be no peace in the Mideast.
It shows the sick mind, and there is no other way to describe it. The sick mind of Hamas terrorists. Throwing bodies out of windows, and using it and using them for their manipulations. Think what these scenes, these manipulations, these atrocities, what it does to the families, of the hostages, of the deceased hostages, what they are going through, undergoing more pain, more agony. Some of these families need to reopen the grave. This is barbaric. This is something beyond words. I can't think of any human being, any decent human being who can see these pictures, see what Hamas does to deceased hostages, and come out and say, I support Hamas. If there's someone that supports these kind of scenes, something is fundamentally wrong with him.
They've got the video. I didn't play it here, but just throwing the dead body out the window. And we're still waiting. How many? It said 13 dead bodies still remain in Gaza. And Hamas shooting at Israeli soldiers, killing another one yesterday. How many times do they get to violate the terms of the ceasefire? I had a story on the show Monday. I didn't have time to get to it, where President Trump said, all right, you've got 48 more hours. I'm giving you two more days. I mean, there at least Donald Trump on Air Force One sounded a little bit tougher, but still, over and again, we just keep giving them a little more time, hoping that they'll change their behavior, hoping that they'll eventually come to love their Jewish neighbors. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the show at our Rumble channel. We've got a YouTube channel as well. And, of course, our website, thetrumpet.com, will take you to the live stream of this show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. here in the central time zone of the United States. You can email the show as well, td@thetrumpet.com. So what a complete farce this ceasefire deal is. And really, what a position to put yourself in. I'm talking about the Trump administration. To get the jihadists in suits to sign a piece of paper to agree to these 20, rules. Just verbally. Yeah, we'll do it. Sure, we'll lay down our arms. We'll turn over Gaza to an international force. We'll give you all the dead bodies back. We'll do it within 48 hours. And they haven't done any of those things. But what a position to put yourself in as the U.S. negotiator to come out right after. I mean, the ink hasn't even dried, and you're saying it's eternal peace. Eternal peace is here. It didn't even last for a week. It didn't even last but for a few days. And it just shows what we've been saying these last few weeks. Peace is coming from God and his government, from Jesus Christ and his administration. But man cannot make peace. That's been man's history. And we've shown you that on this show many times. The Times of Israel says the ceasefire in Gaza Strip has been fragile since U.S. President Donald Trump willed it into existence earlier this month. I mean, he willed it, and by willing it into existence, I mean, most of the pressure was put upon Bibi. All of the foul language, as I've covered, that's aimed at Bibi. That's aimed at the Jews. Terms of ceasefire, I mean, as far as any wiggle room or leeway, there's none of that for the Jews. All of that's reserved for Hamas. Just give them a little bit more time, and hopefully they'll comply. That's been the thinking. After Hamas failed to return any bodies of slain hostages for a week, it said on Monday night, that it would hand over remains it had found that day. Instead, Israel discovered that the casket contained the partial remains of a hostage whose body was already recovered by the military in early December 2023. I mean, you just can't believe anything that they say. They just lie habitually. They lie to your face. That we would even sit down across the table with them or go in, as Witkoff did, and just try to encourage them and comfort them is unbelievable. Lindsey Graham had it right. I don't say that very often. But how, I mean, Hamas is, they're just throwing the remains of dead bodies out windows. He said that the terrorist organization was built on the foundation of killing Jews. And then President, one thing I didn't quite understand, President Trump there on Air Force One, he said Hamas is a very small part of peace in the Middle East. I'm not even sure what that means. They're a small part. Well, I guess there are many different players. They invited the whole region in to try to talk peace. Erdogan came in only on the condition that Bibi wasn't there. But they're a small part of peace. What does that mean? They started the war 2 years ago. And it continues. They're firing away. They're firing away at Jews, at Israel, at Israelis. Play a little bit more from the spokesperson for Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. This is clip 16.
But this video proves more. It proves that Hamas constantly lies. You have it on camera. Hamas comes with this excuse that they don't know where the deceased hostage are. And you have it on camera, and we know it, and we said it, that they do know. They do know where the bodies are. And they lie. And then they lie again when they hide those bodies. And then they lie once more to the world. They lie to the Red Cross. And they lie to you guys, to the media. And they do it bluntly. The only thing is, this time, they were caught.
This time they were caught, but will it change anything? They lie repeatedly. He said in the cold open bit that we had earlier that, I mean, how could anyone in their right mind support this terrorist group? A lot of people do. A lot of people do. It's like my father says in the Key of David book. People just hate the Jews, and they don't even understand why. They don't know why they hate them. They just hate them. I'll play some pretty shocking clips in a moment from Tucker, from Steve Bannon. It really is delusional, deranged reasoning, and you have to wonder if they even understand why they have so much hatred and contempt for the Jewish state, for the Jews. This story that I couldn't get to Monday from JNS, it says U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday urged Hamas to free over the next 48 hours the remains of deceased hostages the terror group still holds in Gaza. This was from Saturday. He sent out a tweet. He said, hey, you've got 48 hours. And what? It's Wednesday now. And now we're seeing dead bodies just thrown out the window. And then lying to the Red Cross. I mean, it just continues daily. How do you negotiate with people like this? How do you trust anything they say or do? Even when they sign the dotted line. Hamas is going to have to start returning the bodies of the deceased hostages, including two Americans, quickly, said President Trump. Just give them a little bit more time. Hopefully they'll comply. Here again is the Israeli spokesperson, clip 17.
The other thing that this video proves, and again, this is the point Israel is saying time and again, that Hamas violates time and again, constantly, the ceasefire agreement. Hamas has an obligation under the agreement to return the bodies of the hostages, but it refused to do so, even though they know exactly where the bodies are. And as I said at the beginning, this wasn't the only violation of Hamas yesterday. Hamas opened fire against our soldiers. They killed one of our soldiers. Since the beginning of the ceasefire, Hamas has violated the agreement hundreds of times. Yesterday was just another example of these violations. Israel will not stand by while being attacked. Israel will continue to uphold the ceasefire agreement and respond firmly to any violation of this agreement.
And of course, when Israel responds, then it comes under heavy pressure from the U.S. and elsewhere to dial it back, to not respond to these kinds of murderous acts. I mean, they violated the agreement 100 times, he said. Hundreds of times, plural. And they keep getting away with it. And you keep hearing strongly worded tweets saying you've got to return all the dead bodies, you've got to stop killing Jews, and they won't do it. There was a poll, JNS reported on this as well, more than half of the Palestinians in the, not just in Gaza, but in Judea and Samaria as well, the West Bank, they still believe that Hamas's decision to launch the October 7 massacre was correct. More than half of Palestinians. So all of this fantasy talk of, well, if we just get in a new government in Gaza, then problem solved. The people of Gaza, they just need an alternative. No. A majority of Palestinians still believe that Hamas was correct. They still support October 7. Says here, the Ramallah-based Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research polled 1,200 Palestinians between October 22nd and October 25th, so just last week, I guess. Following the U.S.-brokered ceasefire that halted 2 years of war in Gaza, support in Judea and Samaria for the deadliest single-day massacre of Jews since the Holocaust held steady at 59%. That's in the West Bank. Why won't the peacemakers, the so-called peacemakers, the ambassadors for peace, why won't they look at this and say, how do you make peace with this mindset? Ask for the most effective means to end the occupation and achieve statehood. 41% of Palestinians picked armed struggle, a euphemism for terrorism. Well, how do you get your state? Well, kill Jews. Just keep killing Jews, and we'll get what we want. And they're pretty much right. They do get what they want by killing and murdering and maiming and raping. Look at how much sympathy they went. I mean, Steve Witkoff walks into the room and tells the Hamas guy, yeah, I'm sorry you lost your terrorist son. And Israel's going to have to apologize for this. When has Hamas ever apologized? You see in a poll right here that just ordinary people in Gaza and the West Bank, they're not apologetic. They don't feel sorry about what happened 2 years ago. They still support it. They want more of it. No wonder Hamas won't stop shooting. They've got support from ordinary Palestinian people, even in the West Bank, a majority. Play clip 18.
I want to be very clear. Israel is committed to the ceasefire. Israel is committed to the Trump plan. The only problem is that Hamas is not committed. The only problem is that Hamas is violating the ceasefire, shooting at us, doing those terrible, barbaric, sadistic maneuvers with bodies of the hostages. And Hamas is doing so because it does not want to see the Trump plan advance. Because part of the Trump plan idea, and its main elements, is that Hamas will be disarmed. So Hamas is trying to do everything possible to avoid this.
That's part of the Trump plan, right? Hamas has to disarm. Hamas has to return the hostages. Hamas, everything Hamas has to do, it hasn't done. They just violate the agreement. And here you have the Israeli spokesperson saying, you know, we want to comply with the agreement, but Hamas doesn't. And he's right. I gave you the quote from my father's article, April 2020. This is at the Trumpet. How insulted must God be when men trust somebody like the top terrorist in the Middle East rather than trusting God? What an insult. What must God think about this? Sitting down, even when Erdogan throws his little tantrum, or when the jihadis, they show up in suits, and then you walk in and with so much arrogance and think, you know, we're going to bring everyone together here. Hamas is just a small part of the piece here, a small piece of the peace puzzle. They'll come around. They'll comply. Eternal peace. It's not exactly eternal, is it? In that article, my father says, the truth is nobody can bring peace in a family or a nation apart from God. It takes God's government, and then the peace comes with it. Isaiah 9, verse 7. The government and peace, God says there's not going to be any end to it. Not when God's government is set up and established on this earth. When I come back, I'll spend some more time on this subject of Jew hatred and why it's just gaining so much momentum. Why the spirit of hating Jews is spreading. And in many cases, as I said earlier, people don't even know why. They don't even know why. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. there is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
How do you explain Mike Huckabee, Ted Cruz, and there are a lot like that, John Bolton. I mean, I've known them all. George W. Bush, like the Karl Rove. I mean, all people I know personally who I've seen like be seized by this brain virus, and they're not Jewish. They're, most of them are self-described Christians. And then the Christian Zionists who are, well, Christian Zionists, like, what is that?
Right.
And I could just say for myself, I dislike them more than anybody, you know, because like, what? Because it's Christian heresy and I'm offended by that as a Christian.
I mean, first he's on with this Fuentes guy, this revisionist historian. And I mean, they're talking about how much they hate those who support Israel, the so-called Christian Zionists. I dislike, Tucker says, I dislike them more than anyone. How do you explain this level of rage or hatred aimed at Jews? Steve Bannon was on with Laura Loomer, and many would say Loomer's pretty radical or extremist. And when she's on with Bannon, if it gets on to the subject of Jews, well, then suddenly she looks like she's the more moderate of the two. Listen to this exchange, clip six.
They got to stop being so obsessed with Israel and so obsessed with the Jews. You know, it's not the Israelis that are going to have
No. Hang on a second. If Netanyahu and the Israeli government had dealt straight with us, you wouldn't have had this problem. They're liars. They've been stone cold liars. They gave bad information. So I'm not going to let that go unchallenged. That's just bullshit. Okay.
Well, people, anyway, need Laura, to we got to go. I totally education more. They need to talk about Islam more.
By the way, I've been the tip of the spear on the Muslim Brotherhood forever, and you're seeing a huge pushback on this. We can do it if we unite. We definitely should have the Muslim Brotherhood designated a terrorist organization, and that will change everything. But don't sit there all innocent about what Netanyahu's government has been atrocious, and we should have regime change in Jerusalem, and we should have it immediately. They've lied to the American government. They've lied to the American people consistently. You can't whitewash. You hurt your argument by sitting there and try to defend Netanyahu. It's just not happening. Anyway, we got to bounce. I got other guests we got to get to.
I'm not sitting here defending Netanyahu. What I'm asking for is that all these, I just want them to dedicate.
Hang on. You say Israeli derangement syndrome. Israeli derangement syndrome. I certainly don't have it. What I have is the Greater Israel Project. That was never done, and no due diligence was done. The American people never signed off that. The Trump administration never signed off on that. That's a Netanyahu. We need regime change in Jerusalem, and we need it tonight. Okay? Oh, everything that comes out of Netanyahu's government is a stone-cold lie.
He says he's not deranged in his reasoning. It's not Israeli derangement syndrome. I'm pro-Israel, but Bibi's got to go. I mean, that's worse than the dear leader. That's worse than Barack Obama. At least Obama tried to conceal his contempt for Israel. But not so with some of the more popular conservative commentators. It's just right out there in the open. We hate them. Everything they say is a lie. Can you imagine? I mean, when has he ever been that strong calling for regime change in Gaza? Everything Hamas says is a lie. And yet get him on the subject of the Jews. Herbert Armstrong, he wrote in his autobiography, "Our radio listeners have heard me say that I bear no hatred toward Jews. I love them as I love all people. Some allowing themselves to become hooked on the insidious, poisonous drug of anti-Semitism and hatred for Jews have never learned all there is to know about Jewish people. It's like a drug. He's right. Well, you heard Tucker there say it's like a brain virus to even support the Jews. It's an insidious, poisonous drug, Jew hatred. And as I say, a lot of these people, they don't even know why they hate the Jews so much. That statement from my father's book, The Key of David book, it says here, most people who hate the Jews don't even know why they do. Can we see Satan behind such lies and hatred? I mean, can you see Satan behind this delusional and deranged thinking? Everything the Bibi administration says is a lie? Really? Well, we're certainly not here to say that any human government is perfect. Far from it. They're all flawed. But where is this leading? Just seeing this relationship between America and Israel unravel. Well, we know eventually Israel's going to turn to the Assyrians. Eventually America will have had enough. That's it. We can't solve it. They keep shooting at each other. We want out. I mean, we don't trust Hamas, but, you know, really, we don't even trust Israel. We don't trust Bibi. All of the contempt, all of the profanity, it's reserved for Benjamin Netanyahu, one of the few leaders that demonstrates at least a little bit of courage in the face of fire. Fire's coming from every direction. And he responds with some courage to a point before the world puts so much pressure on him to pull back, to roll it back, to let Hamas survive. And Hamas survived, and they keep shooting. That quote from 2020, how insulted must God be when men trust somebody like the top terrorist in the Middle East rather than trusting God? Why not trust God? I gave a message over the Feast of Tabernacles about Judah's glorious history. The little Jewish state, the Jewish people. I mean, God isn't afraid to praise them. He does it over and again in Scripture. God established his royal throne in Judah. God established the throne of David in Judah. Jesus Christ sprung from the tribe of Judah. Well, that's pretty significant. If you're a Christian, I'm offended. I'm offended, said Tucker, because I'm a Christian and I don't like these Christian Zionists. Well, the Apostle Paul said that Jesus sprung from Judah. That's in Hebrews 7. Seems like that's praiseworthy. Christ is called the Lion of the tribe of Judah. Jesus was a Jew. Doesn't mean that the Jews do everything right. Sometimes they could maybe help themselves a little bit more. But leave that aside. Why the hatred? Why the contempt? Why are they mocked and ridiculed? Why do so many people want to see them murdered? That courage. I mean, if you look at ancient Israel, it was the tribe of Judah that led the armies of Israel. They were out front. They had the courage to face the bullets first, or the swords, or whatever. They were out front. And even during the days of the first Jeroboam, when so many of the Israelites broke away from the throne of David, Judah didn't do it. Now, you can't exactly say they're faithful to that throne today, but still, they stayed with David's line. They stayed with the throne of David. God charged the tribe of Judah. You can see this in Romans 3. He commissioned the Jewish people to preserve the Old Testament scriptures and also the sacred calendar. I mean, these are things that if you're in God's church, you just take it for granted that every year the Passover happens at a certain time and the Feast of Tabernacles, it's all there organized on the sacred calendar, God's calendar. And, you know, making sure you've got an accurate Old Testament, you know, Bible over the course of centuries before you have, you know, the technology to just print mass copies or photocopy it. You've got to write it out by hand. And you've got to make sure it's accurate. And the reason it's pretty accurate is because they were faithful in looking after that or carrying out that commission. Paul said this, Romans 3, verses 1 and 2. What advantage has the Jew? What profit is there of circumcision? And he says in verse 2, much every way. Can you imagine Tucker or some of these guys saying, what advantage does the Jew have? Well, much every way. He says, chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of God. I mean, God really sees that as praiseworthy. They preserved the oracles. They preserved God's teachings. All scriptures given by inspiration of God, even though they didn't understand it all, they preserved it. And God says, you know what? I really admire that. I'm really grateful for that. I mean, there's something about them that God looked at and said, I'm going to have them preserve the scriptures, the holy scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures. Paul didn't hate the Jews. That comes from the devil. And you look at little Judah today. I mean, they didn't lose all of their traditions. They hung on to at least a certain amount of knowledge about the Sabbath and the holy days. And for that reason, they didn't lose their identity. The rest of the Israelite tribes, and there's more than one, if you know a little bit about the Bible, the Old Testament, there's 12 tribes of Israel. Little Judah held on to its identity, in large part because they didn't just blot out the Sabbath. All the other Israelite tribes did. And then surprise, surprise, we're lost. We don't know our own identity. Notice John 4. This is the exchange between Jesus and the woman, the Samaritan woman at Jacob's well. It says in verse 20, our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and you say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. This woman felt pretty good about her religious background. Well, we're religious people too. We're righteous. Verse 21, Jesus said unto her, woman, believe me, the hour comes when you shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. And he says in verse 22, you worship, you know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. Well, that's quite a statement. Salvation is of the Jews? Look at Genesis 49. Look at the scepter promise. My father in the Key of David book says that we need to spend more time talking about and studying that scepter promise. Salvation is of the Jews. I mean, I just read it to you. That's in the Bible. That's in the New Testament. How about that? That's pretty significant. In his book, my father says, Jesus Christ was not ashamed to say that the Jews had a crucial role in God's plan. Christ was not ashamed of this. The Apostle Paul was not ashamed of this. And neither should you be. These people get off on this subject and they start spewing hatred and they don't even know why. Can you recognize the spirit behind that? My father writes, what does it mean that the scepter shall not depart from Judah? That's from Genesis 49. It means that a royal lineage, Jesus Christ, and salvation are to come through the Jews. The word scepter refers to David's throne and Jesus Christ's rule in the world tomorrow. My father says something about Judah caused God to give him the scepter. He must have displayed exceptional leadership qualities. The physical blessings of greatness and wealth were bestowed on Joseph's sons, but the throne belongs to Judah. Yeah, Herbert Armstrong spends a fair bit of time talking about the birthright promises, all the blessings of wealth and prosperity and power that was to come upon Joseph's sons. You can read all about that in the United States and Britain in prophecy. But don't forget about that scepter promise. Salvation's coming to the whole world. Salvation's coming to every man who's ever lived. And it comes through the Jews. It comes through the Jews. What profit have the Jews? Well, much in every way, said Paul. And then he goes and he lists it off. When we come back, I'll update you on a few stories about the push to rearm in Germany. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
In 1994, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury asked, is Iraq about to fall to Iran? It was a bold statement at the time, but over the next 20 years, this forecast became reality. Today, Iran is the undisputed king in the Middle East. In the early 1990s, we identified Iran as the prophesied king of the south. In the book of Daniel, it says this king of the south will push against the king of the north. These prophecies are being fulfilled before our eyes. To learn more about these incredible prophecies, request your free copy of The King of the South. This booklet examines the history and current events of the Middle East under the light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There's been a lot of debates here in the corridors as well concerning how fit the European Union can get, how fast to get ready for any kind of Russian aggression.
Defense is clear priority both for European Commission and for, I would say, majority of member states. And things are moving quite fast. Now we need to move into what I call delivery stage, which means contracts, production, procurement, and so on and so on.
You've spoken today here also with industry professionals. Mr. Pappberger from Rheinmetall, Germany's largest defense company, that's been ramping up capacity almost tenfold, actually more, over the past couple of years.
We are creating possibilities for member states to develop their defense capabilities. Definitely then it depends on political will in member states, how rapid do they want to develop, how much they are investing into their defense capabilities. Here, Germany is really showing very important, and very significant example. I would call even, inspirational example. Both government and politicians who are finding the ways how to finance, but also industries where I was talking with Rheinmetall, and definitely it's very impressive what they are doing.
That's from Deutsche Welle in Europe. And in the American conservative, of all things, there's a headline, Germany must rearm. We just need, like you heard there in that discussion, we just need the political will. I've talked in recent programs about so many prophecies unfolding, being fulfilled before our eyes. And America, of course, through all of this, being lulled into a false sense of security, the golden age. the golden age. I think Sam alluded to the statement Donald Trump made some months ago, where he encouraged Germany to rearm, but then said, but, you know, don't do it. Don't do too much. He knows about the history. More people should be talking about it. Play President Trump's, and this is, again, on his trip overseas, and he's talking about the golden age, everything that's going well for America. This is clip one.
The United States is blessed with the, right now, the strongest economy, the strongest borders. This all happened over the last 9 months. The strongest military, the strongest friendships, and the strongest spirit of any nation on the face of the earth. This is a golden age in a short period of time. I knew we could do it. I didn't know we were going to do it this quickly. It's a little bit more than 9 months. So in less than 1 year, we've secured commitments for over $18 trillion of new investments. As an example, the previous administration, in 4 years, they did less than a trillion. I think much less, actually. In 9 months, we've lifted over 600,000 Americans off food stamps. Wages for workers are rising at the fastest pace in more than 60 years. And meanwhile, energy prices are down. Gasoline prices are down. Grocery prices are down. Mortgage rates are down, despite the fact that we have an incompetent head of the Fed. We have the strongest military in the world. We have the best equipment. We have the best manufacturers of equipment. And South Korea is buying a lot of our weapons. We make the best.
That's always interesting to hear those kinds of statements at the end. Everything's great. We're booming. And we're also selling a lot of weapons because so many countries want them. Because so many countries want to rearm. They want to build up their military and they want U.S. power and strength behind it. And we're happy to give it to them. There is a resurgence here in the United States. This is from America Under Attack. I haven't referred to this in a while, but my father says this was all a modern-day fulfillment of what happened in ancient Israel under Jeroboam II, a bit of a resurgence, some renewed prosperity, a swell of religious activity, but not the true religion of the Bible. No. I mean, you've got to weed out. You look at the religious revival today. I mean, they're exposing their differences, their divisions, the strife. You just heard from Tucker. Those Christian Zionists, they need to get out. I dislike them more than any others. But as far as the resurgence goes, my father says here, it was a time of many people being lulled into a false sense of security and a belief that God was with them. Yeah, God's with us. God's blessing us. God's blessing the world with peace. We have eternal peace. There's only one war left. If we can negotiate our way out of that final war, it's worldwide peace. This article at the American Conservative, it argues that in the world we're living in today, that Germany needs to be a military power. It says here, Germany, the economic and manufacturing powerhouse of Europe, is surrounded by small protectorates with blood animosity over distant past historic sins who simultaneously are egging on Germany to rearm, spend, and protect them while harboring fugitives who destroy sovereign German wealth. It says here, this is clearly unsustainable. Germany must rearm. That's at the American Conservative. Germany must rearm. You see the headline there. Germany already has friends in the current U.S. administration who are begging Berlin to return to a 1989 force posture, an American desire to shift the burden and encourage Germany to rearm rapidly should, if not for anything, rectify this decades-old unnatural order in Europe. Yeah, we want this. This is good for America. This would be good for Europe. This would provide more resistance to the Russian bear play a little bit more from that Berlin briefing podcast. This is a Deutsche Welle clip 3.
I went to an event with the CEO of Rheinmetall yesterday, and he was telling us about the first months after the start of the war, and it took the German government 6 months to come up with the first substantial contract for Rheinmetall. So a lot of time the war is going on in Ukraine, and then the German government is still thinking what to order. And I think that has really changed. So we see this massive movement push into investing more in the defense sector. And I think that many investors here present at this conference, they have also this feeling that there's now the gold rush, you know, that's the moment to go into the market, because of course it's not considered now anymore like, you know, producing arms is bad for business. On the contrary, we know, and I think most people, at least here at this conference, all of them, of course, understand that it's important to deter Russia, and that is why we need to ramp up weapons production.
They got all the excuses they need. Yeah, we got to resist Russia. And, you know, America's abandoning us. So we've got to do it ourselves. We've got to go it alone. And this has America's blessing. Now we just need the political will to bring it all together. If you're a student of Bible prophecy, if you understand about the Daniel 2 image, or Daniel 7, Revelation 13, Revelation 17, I mean, you know, there's one final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And I went through it with you the other day, the resurgence of religion in Catholic-dominated Europe, and how even King Charles is trying to expedite it. So many of these prophecies, they're all coming together at the same time. One more from that Berlin briefing, clip 4.
I see quite a radical change during this year. I mean, I remember very well what was in the mood, psychological attitude towards defense just last year, at this time, you know, when I was nominated to become a commissioner. Now, there was a lot of skepticism why commission needs to have commissioner. No, it was quite a calm attitude towards how the war is going on. Now, really, attitude is totally different. It's not because of me, but because, you know,
those turns over Poland. And
yeah, but even, you know, I remember for me it was some kind of, you know, big trigger in my mindset, not changing, but, you know, something, what
ringed. The loans, maybe the money.
No, for me it was very, very important back last November. Even, you almost remember that moment, you know. 1 year ago, when German intelligence service, the head of intelligence service, publicly said that their prediction is that during the next 3 or 5 years, Russia will be ready. So for me, that was, you know, something, well, if intelligence services are speaking that, no, this is totally different from what we as politicians are speaking.
Well, we also now have the German chancellor saying that we're neither at peace nor at war.
Yeah, so that is, you know, what started to change. And, you know, and of course, and we built, you know, all sorts of opportunities quite rapidly. There are opinion polls which are showing the public really is very much asking both the EU and member states to spend more of their attention on defense. People are worried about security and defense.
People in Europe, they're worried about security and defense. My father, in January of this year, going back to the first issue of the Trumpet magazine in this calendar year, he said, after Trump's victory, watch Germany. In fact, he was saying that the moment that Donald Trump won. I mean, we're coming up to the one-year anniversary of that election result and the temporary resurgence. And as soon as Donald Trump won, just as your Bible prophesied, my father said, you better keep your eye on Germany. He wrote, as dramatic as the fulfilled prophecy in America is, we also need to pay close attention to events in Germany. We cannot view the Trump resurgence as a sign that God is pleased with America. Yes, God is saving the nation temporarily. He loves us and he's full of mercy. But he must think our sins are terribly dark and evil to allow this empire in Europe to rise up
and correct us. It is prophesied. He went through Habakkuk 1. There's other passages of Scripture. We don't have time to go through it today. We're already a minute over, but I won't charge you for that extra 60 seconds of content. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trump. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.